dimpled the still surface of the water, which made its way into the pool from the overflowing bowl of a giant bronze lotus flower. The square had the air of a place that had been hastily abandoned 5 minutes ago or 5 centuries. It was impossible to tell. Quentin treaded water for a minute, then took one long breaststroke over to the stone lip. The pool was only about 15 feet across, and the rim was scarred and pocked, old limestone. Bracing himself with both hands, he heaved himself up and flopped out of the water onto dry land.
"Jesus," he whispered, panting. "Fucking Penny. It is real."
It wasn't just because he hated Penny. He really hadn't thought it was true.
But now here they were, in the city. This was it. The actual Netherlands,
or something that looked uncannily like them.
It was unbelievable.
The most naive, most blissfully happy-sappy dream of his childhood was true.
God, he'd been so wrong about everything.
He took a deep breath, then another. It was like white light flooding through him. He didn't know he could be this happy. Everything that was weighing him down, Janet, Alice, Penny, everything, was suddenly insubstantial by comparison. If the city was real, then Fillory could be real too. Last night had been a disaster, an apocalypse, but this was so much more important. It was almost funny now. There was so much joy ahead of them. He turned to Alice.
"This is exactly—"
Her fist caught him smack in his left eye. She hit like a girl without any weight behind it, but he hadn't seen it coming to roll with it. The left half of the world flashed white. He bent over, half blind, the heel of his hand over his eye. She kicked him in the shins, one and then the other, with dismaying accuracy.
"Asshole! You asshole!"
Alice's face was pale. Her teeth were chattering.
"You bastard! You fucking coward!"
"Alice," he managed.
"Alice, I'm sorry, but listen, look—"
He tried to point at the world around them while also verifying that his cornea was still intact.
"Don't you fucking speak to me!"
She slapped wildly at his head and shoulders with both hands so that he ducked and put up his arms.
"Don't you even dare talk to me, you whore! You fucking whore!"
He staggered a few steps away across the stone, trying to escape, his sopping wet clothes flapping, but she followed him like a swarm of bees. Their voices sounded small and empty in the echoless square.
"Alice! Alice!"
His orbital ridge was a ring of fire.
"Forget about all that for a second. Just for a second."
She'd still been holding the button in her fist when she clocked him. It must be a lot heavier than it looked.
"You don't understand. It was just everything."
There was a right way to say this.
"I got confused. Life just seems so empty. I mean, out there, it's like what you said. We have to live while we can. Or that's what I thought. But it got out of control. It just got out of control."
Why was he talking in clichés? Get to the point. He definitely had one.
"We were all just so drunk."
"Really?
Too drunk to fuck?"
She had him there.
"I could kill you. Do you understand that?"
Her face was terrible. There were two white-hot points on her flushed cheeks.
"I could burn you to nothing right where you stand. I'm stronger than you. Nothing you could do would stop me."
"Listen, Alice," he had to stop her from talking.
"I know it's bad. It's very, very bad, and I'm so sorry. You'll never know how sorry. You have to believe me, but it's so important that you understand." "What are you, a child? You got confused? Why didn't you just end it, Quentin? You obviously lost interest a long time ago. You really are a child, aren't you? You're obviously not enough of a man to have a real relationship. You're not even enough of a man to end a real relationship. Do I have to do absolutely everything for you? Oh, you know what it is? You hate yourself so much. You'll hurt anybody who loves you. That's it, isn't it? Just to get even with them for loving you. I never saw that before now."
She stopped at this, shaking her head, lost in a dream of disbelief. Her own words had brought her up short. In the silence, the fact that he had cheated on her, and with Janet of all people, hit her all over again as fully as it had the first time, 2 hours ago. Quentin could see it. It was like she'd been shot in the stomach. She held up her hand, palm out, like she was shielding her eyes from his monstrous face. A lock of wet hair was plastered to her cheek. She was gasping for breath. Her lips had gone pale, but they kept moving.
"Was it worth it?" she said. "You always wanted her. You think I didn't see that? You think I'm stupid? Answer me. Do you think I'm stupid? Just tell me. I really want to know if you think I'm stupid."
She ran at him and slapped his face. He took the full force of the blow.
"No, I don't think you're stupid, Alice."
Quentin felt like a boxer who was knocked out, standing out on his feet, crosses for eyes, just wishing to God that he could fall down. She was right, 1,000 times right, but if he could just make her see what he saw, if she could only put things in proper perspective. Fucking women! She was walking away now toward one of the alleys that led to another square, leaving a trail of damp, squashing footprints behind her. "But will you please look around you?" He was begging, trailing after her, his voice ragged with exhaustion. "Will you please acknowledge for a second that something more important than who's stuck what body part where is going on around you?" She wasn't listening, or maybe she was just determined to say what she was going to say.
"You know,"
she said, almost conversationally, crossing into the next square,
"I bet you actually thought fucking her was going to make you happy. You just go from one thing to the next, don't you? And you think it's going to make you happy. Break bills didn't. I didn't. Did you really think Janet would? It's just another fantasy, Quentin."
She stopped and hugged her arms over her midsection like the pain was a gastric ulcer and sobbed bitterly. Her wet clothes clung to her. A little pool was forming around her. He wanted to comfort her, but he didn't dare touch her. The stillness of the square was almost tangible around them. The Fillory books had described them as all exactly identical, but he could see they weren't, far from it. They shared the same crypto-Italian style, but this one had a colonnade on one side, and the fountain in the center was rectangular, not round like the one they'd come in through. At one end, a white marble face vomited water into it. Footsteps on stone. Quentin thought he would have welcomed any interruption, anything, especially if it was carnivorous and would eat him alive.
"Kind of a reunion, isn't it?"
Penny came stepping briskly across the flagstones toward them. The gray facade of a stone piazza loomed above them with heraldic inlays, an anchor and 3 flames. Penny looked as happy and relaxed as Quentin had ever seen him. He was in his element and glowing with pride. His clothes were dry.
"Sorry, I've spent so much time here, but I've never had anybody to show it to. You wouldn't think that would matter, but it does. When I first came through, there was a corpse lying right there on the ground, right over there."
He pointed like a campus tour guide.
"Human, or close to it anyway. Maybe Maori. He had a tattoo on his face. He could only have been dead a few days. He must have gotten trapped here, came in, but the pools wouldn't let him out somehow. I think he died of starvation. The next time I came, the body was gone."
Penny studied their 2 faces and took in the situation for the first time. Alice's tears, Quentin's rapidly darkening black eye, their toxic body language.
"Oh."
His face softened slightly. He made a gesture, and suddenly their clothes were warm and dry and pressed, too.
"Look, you have to forget about all that stuff here. This place can be dangerous if you're not paying attention. I'll give you an example. Which way would you go to get back to our home square?"
Alice and Quentin looked around obediently, Penny's reluctant students. In their running fight, they had cut an angle through the 2nd square into a 3rd. Or a fourth? Their footprints had already faded. There was an alley on each side of the square, and through each alley you could catch a glimpse of other irregular alleys and fountains and squares, more and more, diminishing to infinity. It was like a trick with mirrors. The sun was hidden, if there even was a sun. Penny was right. They had no idea which one led back to Earth, or even which general direction they'd come from.
"Don't worry, I marked it. You only came about a quarter mile. One up and one over."
Penny pointed in exactly the opposite direction Quentin would have guessed.
"In the book, they just wander at random, and it always comes out all right, but we have to be more careful. I use orange spray paint to mark a path. I have to do it fresh every time I come here. The paint disappears."
Penny headed back in the direction he'd pointed. Tentatively, without looking at each other, Quentin and Alice fell in behind him. Their clothes were getting damp all over again from the rain.
"I have strict operating procedures when I'm here. There are no directions, so I've had to invent new ones. I named them after the buildings in the Earth Square, one for each side. Palace, villa, tower, church. Can't be a real church, but that's what it looks like. This is churchward, the way we're going now."
They were back at the fountain, which Penny had circled with big, sloppy X's of fluorescent orange paint. A little way off there was a crude shelter, a tarp with a cot and a table underneath. Quentin wondered how he'd missed it before.
"I set up a base camp here for a while with food and water and books."
He was so excited, like a rich, unpopular kid the first time he brings home friends to see his fancy toys. He didn't even notice that Quentin and Alice weren't saying anything.
"I always thought it would be Melanie who came here the first time, but she could never quite work the spells. I tried to teach her, but she's not quite strong enough. Almost, though. In a way, I'm happy it's you guys. You know, you were the only friends I ever had at Breakbills."
Penny shook his head as if there was something amazing about the fact that more people didn't like him. Only 12 hours ago, Quentin thought, he and Alice would have barely been able to keep from cracking up with conspiratorial laughter at the suggestion that they had ever been friends with Penny.
"Oh, I almost forgot. No light spells here. They go crazy. When I first came here, I tried to do a basic illumination. I couldn't see for 2 hours afterward. It's like the air here is hyper-oxygenated, only with magic. One spark and everything goes up."
There were 2 stone steps leading up to the fountain. Quentin sat down on the top one and leaned his back against the rim. The water looked unnaturally black, like ink. There was no point in fighting anymore. He would just sit here and listen to Penny talk.
"You wouldn't believe how far I've walked in this place. Hundreds of miles. Way farther than the Chatwins ever went. Once I saw a fountain that had overflowed like a plugged-up toilet and flooded its square 1 foot deep and half the squares around it. Twice I've seen ones that were capped, sealed over with a bronze cover like a well, like they were keeping people out. Or in. Once I found fragments of white marble on the pavement. I think it was a broken sculpture. I tried to piece it back together to see what it was a statue of, but I never could. You can't get into the buildings. I've tried every way you can think of. Lockpicks, sledgehammers. Once I brought an acetylene cutting torch. And the windows are too dark to see in, but once I brought a flashlight, you know, one of those high-intensity rescue flashlights that the Coast Guard uses, when I turned it all the way up, I could see inside just a little bit. I'll tell you something. They're full of books. Whatever they look like on the outside, on the inside, every one of these buildings is really a library."
Quentin had no idea how long they'd been there. But it was a while. Hours, maybe. They'd walked through square after square like lost tourists, the three of them. Everything they saw shared a common style and the same weathered, ancient look, but nothing ever quite repeated. Quentin and Alice couldn't look at each other, but they couldn't resist the seductions of this grand, melancholy place either. At least the rain had let up. They passed through a tiny square, a quarter the size of the others, and paved in cobblestones, where if they stood in the center, it seemed like they could hear the ocean, the breaking and withdrawing of waves. In another square, Penny pointed out a window with ghostly scorch marks above it, as if it had been the scene of a fire. Quentin wondered who had built this place and where they'd gone. What had happened here? Penny described in great technical detail his elaborate but ultimately unsuccessful campaign to rappel up the side of one of the buildings to get a view above the rooftops. The one time he'd managed to secure a line on a piece of decorative masonry, he'd been overcome by dizziness halfway up, and when he recovered, he found himself turned around, rappelling down the same wall he'd been trying to ascend. At different times, all three of them saw, in the farthest possible distance, a verdant square that seemed to contain a garden with rows of what might have been lime trees in it. But they could never reach it. As they approached, it always lost itself in the shifting perspectives of the alleyways, which were slightly out of alignment with one another. "We should get back," Alice said, finally. Her voice sounded dead. It was the first time she'd spoken since she screamed at him.
"Why?"
Penny asked. He was having the time of his life. He must have been terribly lonely here, Quentin thought.
"It doesn't matter how much time we spend here, you know. No time passes on Earth. To the others it'll be like we popped out and popped right back, just like that, bing-bang. They won't even have time to be surprised. I spent a whole semester here once and nobody noticed."
"I'm sure we wouldn't have noticed anyway," Quentin said, because he knew Penny would ignore him. "I'm actually probably a year or so older than you guys subjectively because of all the time I spent here. I should have kept closer track."
"Penny, what are we doing here?"
Penny looked puzzled.
"Isn't it obvious? Quentin, we're going to Fillory. We have to. This is going to change everything."
"Okay. Okay." Something nagged at him about this, and he was going to put it into words. He had to force his weary brain to grind out thoughts.
"Penny, we have to slow down. Look at the big picture. The Chatwins got to go to Fillory because they were chosen by Ember and Umber, the magic sheep, rams. They were there to do good, to fight the Watcherwoman or whatever."
Alice was nodding.
"They only got to go when something was going on," she said. "The Watcherwoman, or the Wandering Dune, or that ticking watch thing in the Flying Forest, or to find Martin. That was what Helen Chatwin was saying. We can't just go barging in without an invitation. That's why she hid the buttons in the first place. They were a mistake. Fillory wasn't like the real world. It was a perfect universe where everything was organized for good. Ember and Umber are supposed to control the borders. But with the buttons, anybody could get in. Random people who weren't part of the story. Bad people. The buttons weren't part of the logic of Fillory. They were a hole in the border, a loophole."
The mere fact that Alice knew her Fillory lore cold, no hesitation, added another high-powered exponent to Quentin's guilty, bankrupt longing for her. How could he have gotten so confused that he thought he wanted Janet instead of her? Penny was nodding and rocking his whole body forward and backward, semi-autistically.
"But you're forgetting something, Alice. We're not bad people."
The zeal light came on behind Penny's eyes.
"We're the good guys. Has it occurred to you that maybe that's why we found the button in the first place? Maybe this is it. We're getting the call. Maybe Fillory needs us."
He waited expectantly for a reaction. "It's thin, Penny," Quentin said finally, weakly. "This is all really thin."
"So what?" Penny stood up. "So what? So what if Fillory doesn't work out, which it will?
So we end up somewhere else. It's another world, Quentin. It's a million other worlds. The Neitherlands are the place where all worlds meet. Who knows what other imaginary universes might turn out to be real? All of human literature could just be a user's guide to the multiverse. Once I marked off 100 squares straight in one direction and never saw the edge of this place, we could explore for the rest of our lives and never begin to map it all. This is it, Quentin. It's the new frontier, the challenge of our generation and the next 50 generations after that. It all starts here, Quentin, with us. You just have to want it. What do you say?
He actually stuck out his hand, as if he expected Quentin and Alice to put theirs on top of his, and they would all do a football cheer. Go team! Quentin was sorely tempted to leave him hanging, but finally he let Penny give him a limp low five. His eye still throbbed.
We should get back, Alice said again. She looked exhausted. She couldn't have slept much last night.
Alice produced the oddly weighty pearl button from her pocket. It looked ridiculous. It had sounded reasonable enough in the books, but that was the books, and the Chatwins had used the buttons only the one time. In real life, it was like they were playing some children's game. It was a little kid's idea of a magical object. Now, what did you expect from a bunch of talking bunnies? Back in their home square, they lined up on the edge of the fountain, holding hands, balancing precariously on the rim. The prospect of getting wet again was unspeakably depressing. In a corner of the square, Quentin saw that a sapling had broken its way up through one of the paving stones from below. It was gnarled and bent, twisted almost into the shape of a helix, but it was alive. It made him wonder what had been paved over to build the city, and what would be there if it should ever fall. Had there been woods here? Would there be again? This, too, shall pass. Alice stood on Penny's other side so she wouldn't have to touch Quentin. They stepped off the edge together, right foot first, in sync. The crossing was different this time. They fell down through the water like it was air, then through darkness. Then it was like they were falling out of the sky, down toward Manhattan on a gray Friday morning in winter. Brown parks, gray buildings, yellow taxis waiting on stripy white crosswalks, black rivers studded with tugboats and barges. Down through the gray roof and into the living room where Janet and Elliot and Richard were still caught in mid-double take, as if Alice had just now grabbed the button in Penny's pocket, as if the past 3 hours hadn't even happened.
"Alice," Janet said gleefully, "get your hand out of Penny's pants."
Upstate. Of course, after that, everybody had to go. They barely even said anything about Quentin's swollen eye. The natives were restless, he ad-libbed dryly. Moments after he and Alice returned, Josh came in. He'd spent the night with Anais after all. And they had to tell him the whole story all over again. Then they went through in threes. Josh went through with Penny and Richard. Penny took Janet and Elliot through. Josh called Anais and made her come over, and she went through with him and Penny. Of them all, only Janet had a bad reaction. The moment they surfaced, apparently, she heaved and threw up her breakfast right into the cold, clear, magical water. Then she panicked. Elliot came back with a dead-on impression of the frantic way she'd clutched Penny's arm and said, "Button! Button! Now!" Quentin was unmoved by her discomfort. She was a vampire, he thought. She preyed on other people's healthy love and made it sick and crippled. The mood in the room was serious and sober. Everybody gave each other long, searching looks, heavy with significance. Nobody could seem to put into words how important it was, but they all agreed that this was a major thing. Major.
and it had to be their thing, for now at least. They had to contain it. Nobody else could know. At Penny's insistence, they sat down in a big circle on the rug in the living room and rewove the wards on the apartment, right then and there, working together. Richard's taste for authority, which so often made his presence all but unendurable, turned out to come in handy now. He directed the group casting in an efficient, business-like fashion, like a seasoned conductor leading a chamber orchestra through a difficult passage of Bartok. It took 20 minutes to finish the spell, and then 10 more to add some fancy extra defensive and concealment layers, prudent, given the level of interest the button was evidently attracting in the at-large magical ecosystem. When they were done, when everything was checked out and double-checked, a hush settled over the room. They all sat still and just let the magnitude of what was happening here marinate in their minds. Josh rose quietly and went to the kitchen to make sandwiches for lunch. Elliot threw open a window and lit a cigarette. Janet regarded Quentin with cool amusement. Quentin lay back on the rug and stared up at the ceiling. He needed sleep, but this was no time for sleep. Wild emotions competed for possession of his brain, like rival armies taking and retaking the same hill. Excitement, remorse, anticipation, foreboding, grief, anger. He tried to focus on Fillory, to make the good feeling come back. This would change everything. Yes, his universe had just expanded times a million, but Fillory was the key to it all. That creeping, infectious sense of futility that had been incubating in his brain even since before graduation had met its magic bullet. Alice didn't see it yet, but she would. This was what they'd been waiting for. This is what her parents had never found. A bleary grin kept smearing itself across his face, and the years fell away from him like layers of dead skin. They weren't wasted years exactly, he could never say that, but they were years in which, in spite of all his amazing gifts, he'd been conscious of somehow not quite getting the gift he wanted. Enough to get by on, maybe, sure, but this was everything. Now the present had a purpose, and the future had a purpose, and even the past, their whole lives, retroactively, had meaning. Now they knew what it was for. If only it hadn't happened now. If Penny could just have shown up a day earlier. Fucking Penny. Everything had been completely ruined and then completely redeemed in such rapid succession that he couldn't tell which state ultimately applied. But if you looked at it a certain way, what happened between him and Janet wasn't about him and Janet at all, or even him and Alice. It was a symptom of the sick, empty world they were all in together. And now they had the medicine. The sick world was about to be healed. The others stayed sitting on the floor, leaning back on their elbows, lounging with their backs against the couch, glancing at one another every once in a while and breaking out in incredulous giggles. It was like they were stoned. Quentin wondered if they were feeling what he was feeling. This was what they'd been waiting for, too, without knowing it, he thought. The thing that was going to save them from the ennui and depression and meaningless busy work that had been stalking them ever since graduation with its stale, alcoholic breath. It was finally here, and not a moment too soon. They couldn't go on like this, and now they wouldn't have to. It was Elliot who finally took control of the situation. He almost seemed like his old self again. Calendars were cleared. Nobody had any serious obligations pending. Not compared to this. Nothing that couldn't be delayed or sicked out of or blatantly welched on. He clapped his hands and gave orders, and everybody seemed to enjoy being serious and efficient for a change. Nobody knew Anaïs especially well. Not even Josh, really. But she turned out to be a highly useful individual. Her circle of acquaintance included somebody who knew somebody who owned a place upstate, a comfortable old farmhouse on 100 acres,
somewhere private enough and defensible enough to use as a staging area for whatever it was they were going to do next. And that first somebody was also a magician senior enough to open a portal to get them there. She would come by later that afternoon, as soon as the Nets game was over. They had to do it on the roof, because the very effective and thorough triple-triple wards they'd just that morning set up, and were now about to abandon, prevented any magical transport directly in or out of the apartment. By 5:30 that afternoon, they were looking out over the crowded cocktail tray skyline of Lower Manhattan. No one else was up there in winter. The roof was littered with windblown, overturned plastic lawn furniture and char-encrusted barbecue implements. A lonely wind chime burbled to itself from the eaves of a utility shed. They hugged themselves against the cold and scuffed the gravel with their feet as they watched a hale, gray-haired Belgian sorceress with nicotine-stained fingers and a rather sinister wicker fetish on a string around her neck pull open the portal. It was a five-sided portal, the bottom edge running parallel to the ground, and its vertices shed tiny, sputtering, actinic blue-white sparks, a purely cosmetic touch, Quentin suspected, but they gave the scene an air that was both melancholy and festive at the same time. There was a sense of momentous occasion. They were embarking on a grand adventure on the spur of the moment. Isn't that what it means to be alive, goddammit? When the portal was finished and stable, the gray-haired witch kissed Anaïs on both cheeks, said something in French, and left hurriedly, but not before Janet made her take a picture of all of them together, with their trunks and bundles and bags full of groceries piled up behind them, using a disposable camera. The group, all eight of them now, stepped through together onto a vast, frost-burnt front lawn. The serious mood on the roof was instantly broken as Janet and Anaïs and Josh raced one another inside and squealed and bounced on the sofas and ran around arguing over the bedrooms. Anaïs had been mostly right about the house. It was certainly large and comfortable, and at least a few bits of it were old. Apparently, it was once a generously proportioned colonial farmhouse, but somebody with progressive architectural ideas had gotten hold of it and remixed its old timber and fieldstone with glass and titanium and poured cement and added flat-screen TVs and a high-end audio system and an AGA range. Alice went directly and silently up to the master bedroom, which took up almost half the third floor, and closed the door, glaring away any rival claimants with burning, red-rimmed eyes. Suddenly exhausted after his mostly sleepless night, followed by his magically extended day, Quentin found a small guest bedroom at the back of the house. Its hard, antiseptic twin bed felt like all he deserved. It was dark when he woke up. The cool blue digits of the clock radio said 10:27. In the darkness, they could have been phosphorescent squiggles on the side of a deep-sea fish. He couldn't find the light switch, but his groping hands encountered the door to a small half-bath and managed to turn on the light over the mirror. Quentin splashed water on his face and wandered out into the strange house. He found the others, except for Alice and Penny, in the dining room, where they had already made and demolished a meal of heroic proportions, the remains of which lay spread out on a stupendous table that looked like it was built from the beams of the true cross, handsomely varnished and nailed together with authentic iron spikes. Large pieces of modern art, the color and texture of dried, crusted blood, hung on the walls. "Q!" they shouted. "Where's Alice?"
"Came and went," Josh said. "What's going on? You guys fighting or what?"
He shadowboxed a jab or two. He obviously didn't know what had happened. Anaïs, sitting next to him, delivered a mock knockout punch to his stubbly chin. They were all drunk again, same as last night, same as every night. Nothing had changed.
"Seriously," Janet said. "Did she give you that shiner? Seems like somebody's always punching you in the face, Q."
Her manner was as bright and toxic as ever, but her eyes were rimmed with red. Quentin wondered if she'd come out of last night's holocaust quite as unscathed as he'd thought. "It was Ember and Umber," he said. "The magic rams. Didn't Alice tell you? They punished me for being sinful."
"Yeah?" Josh said. "Did you kick their woolly asses?"
"I turned the other cheek." Quentin didn't feel like talking, but he was hungry. He got a plate from the kitchen and sat down at the far end of the table and served himself leftovers.
"We were talking about what to do next," Richard said, "making up an actions list."
"Right," Josh pounded authoritatively on the heavy table. "Who's got some action items for me? We need to enumerate our deliverables."
"Food," Richard said, straight-faced. "And if we're really going to Fillory, we all need to reread all the books."
"Gold," Anais chipped in gamely. "And trade items. What do Fillorians want? Cigarettes?"
"We're not going to Brezhnev era Russia, Anais. Steel?
Gunpowder?"
"My God," Elliot said, "listen to you people. I'm not going to be the man who brought the gun to Fillory."
"We should bring overcoats," Richard said. "Tents. Cold weather gear. We have no idea what season it is there. We could be walking into deep winter."
Yesterday, meaning before his nap, Fillory was going to make everything all right. Now it was hard to focus on it. It seemed like a dream again. Now the mess with Janet and Alice was the real thing. It would drag everything else down with it. He pulled himself together with an effort.
"How long are we talking about going for?"
"A couple of days?"
"Look, we can just come back if we forget something," Elliot said. "With the button, it's a snap. We'll just stay till it gets boring."
"What should we do when we get there?"
"I think they'll probably give us a quest," Penny said. "That's what always happened to the Chatwins."
Heads turned. Penny was standing in the doorway in a T-shirt and sweatpants, blinking like an owl, looking like he'd just woken up too.
"I don't know if we can count on that, Penny." For some reason it annoyed Quentin how starry-eyed and optimistic Penny was being about this. "It's not like the Rams summoned us. It might not even be like the books. Maybe there never were any quests. Plover probably just put that stuff in so there would be a good story. Maybe we'll just suck around Fillory like we're sucking around here."
"Don't be a killjoy," Josh said. "Just because your girlfriend beats you up."
Penny was shaking his head.
"I just don't see Plover coming up with all that stuff on his own. It's not rational. He was a gay dry-cleaning magnate with a background in practical chemistry. He didn't have a creative bone in his body. No way. It's Occam's razor. It's much more likely that he was writing it as it happened."
"So, what do you think?" Elliot said. "We're going to meet a damsel in distress?"
"We might. Not necessarily a damsel, but, you know, a nymph, maybe, or a dwarf, or a Pegasus. You know, that needs help with something."
Everybody was laughing, but Penny kept on going. It was almost touching.
"Seriously, it happens in the books every time."
Josh pushed a tiny doll glass of something clear and alcoholic in front of Quentin, and he took a sip. It was some kind of fiery fruit, eau de vie, and it tasted like a vital nutrient that his body had been chronically deprived of his entire life.
"Sure, but real life's not actually like that," Quentin went on, fumbling after what he was sure was an important insight. "You don't just go on fun adventures for good causes and have happy endings. You're not going to be a character in a story. There's nobody arranging everything for you. The real world just doesn't work like that."
"Maybe your world doesn't, Earthman," Josh said. He winked. "We're not in your world anymore." And I don't want to turn this into a theological discussion, Richard added with towering dignity, but there is room for disagreement on that score.
And even if you don't believe that this world has a God, Penny finished up, you must admit that Fillory has one. Two, even.
This does bring us back, albeit in an insane way, to what is actually a pretty reasonable question, Elliot said, which is, what do we do when we get there?
We should go after that magic flower, Josh suggested. You know, the one that when you smell it, it automatically makes you happy? Remember that? That thing would be worth bank here.
While nobody was watching, Janet caught Quentin's eye and waggled her eyebrows and did something lewd with her tongue. Quentin eyed her back, unblinking. She was actually enjoying this, he thought. She'd sabotaged him and Alice, and she was loving it. Little montage flashes of last night. It couldn't possibly have just been last night. Cycled through his brain, snapshots that had stubbornly survived the merciful angel of alcoholic erasure. Everything about sex with Janet had been so different from Alice. The smell, the feel of her skin, her business-like know-how. The shame and the fear had caught up with him even before it was over, before he came, but he hadn't stopped.
And had Elliot really been awake for the whole thing?
His brain dealt out a sloppy fan of mental Polaroids, out of sequence. An image of Janet kissing Elliot, of her hand working diligently between Elliot's legs.
Had she really been weeping? Had he kissed Elliot?
A vivid sense memory of somebody else's stubble, surprisingly scratchy, chafing his cheek and upper lip.
Good God, he thought wearily. What goes on?
He had reached the outer limits of what fun, capital F, could do for him. The cost was way too high, the returns pitifully inadequate. His mind was dimly awakening, too late, to other things that were as important or even more so. Poor Alice. He needed a hair shirt or ashes or a scourge. There should be some ritual that he could perform to show her how desperately sorry he was. He would do anything if she would just tell him what to do.
He shoved the pictures back down wherever they came from, back into the mental shuffle, speeding them on their way with some more of that yummy eau de vie. An idea was germinating in his tired, bruised brain.
We could find Martin Chatwin, Richard volunteered, the way the other children were always trying to.
I'd like to bring something back for Fog, Elliot said. Something for the school, an artifact or something.
That's it, Josh said. You're going to Fillory to bring back an apple for teacher? God, you're so unbelievably lame sometimes.
Oddly, Elliot didn't take the bait. This was affecting them all in different ways.
Maybe we could find the questing beast, Quentin said quietly.
The what?
Josh wrinkled his forehead. No Fillory scholar he. From The Girl Who Told Time, remember? The beast that can't be caught. Helen chases it.
What do you do with it if you catch it? Eat it?
I don't know. Maybe it leads you to treasure, or gives you some secret wisdom, or something. He hadn't thought this through completely. It had seemed important to the Chatwins, but now he couldn't remember why.
You never find out, Penny said. Not in the books. They never catch it, and Plover never mentions it again. It's a good idea. But I was thinking, you know, maybe they'll make us kings. Kings and queens, the way the Chatwins were.
As soon as Penny said it, Quentin wondered why he hadn't thought of it himself. It was so obvious. They'd be kings and queens. Of course they would. If the city was real, why not all the rest of it, even that? They could live in Castle Whitespire. Alice could be his queen. God, he was agreeing with Penny. That was a danger sign if there ever was one.
Huh,
Janet mulled this over, her ever-alert brain ticking over. She was actually taking it seriously, too.
Would we have to marry each other?
Not necessarily. The Chatwins didn't. Then again, they were all siblings.
I don't know, said Anais. It sounds like a big job, being queen. There is probably bureaucracy, administration.
Lucrative enough. Think of the perks. If the books are even accurate, Elliot said, and if the thrones are vacant, that's two big ifs. Plus there's seven of us and only four thrones. Three people get left out.
I'll tell you what we need, Anais said. We need war magic, battle magic, offense, defense. We need to be able to hurt people if we have to.
Janet looked amused. Shit's illegal, babe, she said, obviously impressed, despite herself. You know that.
I don't care if it is, Anais shook her precious blonde curls. We need it. We have no idea what we will be seeing when we cross over. We have to be ready. Unless any of you big, strong men knows how to use a sword.
There was silence, and she smirked.
Alors? Did they teach you that stuff where you went?
Josh asked. He looked a little afraid of her.
We are not so pure in Europe as you Americans, I guess.
Penny was nodding.
Battle magic isn't illegal in Fillory.
Out of the question, Richard said crisply. Do you realize the kind of heat you'd bring down on us? Who here besides me has dealt with the magician's court? Anybody?
We're already in the shit, Richard, Elliot said. You think that button would be legal if the court knew about it? If you want out, get out now. But Anais is right.
I'm not going over there with just my dick in my hand. We can get a dispensation for small arms, Richard went on primly. There are precedents for that. I know the forms.
Guns?
Elliot made a sour face. What's wrong with you?
Fillory is a pristine society. Have you ever even watched Star Trek? This is basic Prime Directive stuff. We have a chance to experience a world that has not yet been fucked up by assholes. Do any of you get how important that is? Any of you?
Quentin kept expecting Elliot to declare himself too cool for the whole Fillory project and start making snarky jokes about it, but he was turning out to be surprisingly focused and unironic about it. Quentin couldn't remember the last time Elliot had been openly enthusiastic about anything. It was a relief to see that he could still admit that he cared about something.
I do not want to be around Penny with a gun, Janet said firmly.
Look, Anais is right, Elliot said. We'll work up some basic attack spells just in case. Nothing too insane. We'll just have a couple of aces in the hole. And we have those cacodemons in our backs, don't forget. And the button,
and our dicks in our hands, Anais giggled.
The next day, Richard, Elliot, Janet, and Anais drove into Buffalo to shop for supplies. Janet, being from L.A., was the only one who had a driver's license. Quentin, Josh, Alice, and Penny were supposed to be researching battle magic, but Alice wouldn't speak to Quentin. He had knocked on her door that morning, but she wouldn't come out. And the technicalities were beyond Josh, so it came down to Alice and Penny working together. Soon the big dining room table was covered with books from Penny's U-Haul stash and sheets of butcher paper crawling with flow charts. They were deep into it. As the two biggest magic nerds of the group, Alice and Penny were completely absorbed in each other, speaking some ad hoc technical jargon they came up with on the fly, Penny scribbling reams of archaic notations, and Alice nodding seriously over his shoulder and pointing. They were doing original work, building spells from scratch. It wasn't fantastically difficult stuff, but any prior art in the area had been thoroughly suppressed. Watching them work, Quentin was consumed with jealousy. Thank God it was Penny. Anybody else and he would have been seriously suspicious. He and Josh spent the afternoon in the den with some beer and smart food, watching cable on a flat-screen TV the size of a billboard. There had been no TV at Brakebill's or in their Manhattan apartment, and it felt exotic and forbidden. Around 5 o'clock, Elliot came and roused them.
"Come on," he said. "You're missing Penny's big show."
"How was Buffalo?"
"Like a vision of the apocalypse. We bought parkas and hunting knives."
They trailed Elliot out to the backyard. Seeing him happy and excited and reasonably sober restored Quentin's faith in the possibility that they were on the right track, that everything broken was fixable. He grabbed a scarf and a bizarre Russian hat with ear flaps that he found in a closet. The sun was setting behind the Adirondacks in the distance, cold and red and desolate through the haze. The others were grouped at the bottom of the lawn, which sloped down to a row of bare, decorative lindens. Penny was sighting down his arm at one of the trees while Alice paced off distance in long, even steps. She jogged over to Penny, and they whispered. Then she paced off the distance again. Janet stood to one side with Richard, looking adorable in a pink parka and a woolly watch cap.
"All right," Penny called. "Stand back, everybody."
"How much farther back can we stand?" Josh asked.
Sitting on a broken white marble balustrade, a random architectural element dropped in by the landscaper, he took a nip from a bottle of schnapps and passed it to Elliot.
"Just so you're standing back."
"Okay, fire in the hole."
Like a sequined assistant, Alice stepped up to an end table on the green, placed an empty wine bottle on it, and stepped away. Facing the bottle, Penny took a quick breath and spoke a rapid sequence of clipped syllables under his breath, ending with a one-handed flicking gesture. Something, a spray of three somethings, steely gray and tightly grouped, shot out of his fingertips, too fast to follow, and flickered across the lawn. Two of them missed, but one of them snapped the bottle's neck off cleanly, leaving the base standing headlessly upright. Penny grinned. There was scattered applause.
"We call it Magic Missile," he said.
"Magic Missile, baby!"
Josh's breath steamed in the cold air. His face was radiant with excitement.
"That's straight-up Dungeons and Dragons shit."
Penny nodded.
"We actually based some of this on old D&D spells. There's a lot of practical thinking in those books."
Quentin wasn't smiling.
Wasn't anybody going to say anything? This was dark magic.
God knows he wasn't a prude,
but this was a spell meant to break up flesh, to physically wound. They were crossing so many lines it was hard to figure out where they were anymore. If they ever actually had to cast this stuff, it would already be too late.
"God, I hope we don't have to use that," was all he said out loud.
"Oh, come on, Quentina. We're not looking for trouble. We just want to be ready if it comes."
Josh could hardly contain himself.
"Dungeons and Dragons, motherfucker!"
Next, Alice whisked the card table away so that Penny stood alone, facing the dark line of lindens. The others stood and sat scattered behind him under the empty sunset sky. The sun was almost down now. Their noses were running and their ears were red, but the cold didn't seem to bother Penny, who was still wearing only a T-shirt and sweatpants. They were really in the middle of nowhere. Quentin was used to the background blare and hum of Manhattan, and even at Brakebill's there were so many people around, there had always been someone somewhere yelling or knocking something over or blowing something up. Here, when the wind wasn't sighing moodily in the trees, there was nothing. The whole world was on mute. He tied down the ear flaps of his Russian hat with a string.
"If this doesn't work," Penny began.
"Just do it already," Janet said. "It's cold out here."
Penny did a deep knee bend and spat on the gray-brown grass. Then he executed a grotesque, wild-armed, flailing movement at odds with what Quentin had seen of his otherwise highly disciplined style. Violet light sputtered in his cupped hands in the darkness, so that the bones in his fingers were visible through the skin. He shouted something and finished with an overarm pitching motion. A small, dense, orange spark left Penny's palm and flew across the grass, dead level. At first it looked absurdly inoffensive, silly, like a toy or an insect. But as it sailed toward the trees, it grew, blooming into a fiery, sparking comet the size of a beach ball, veined and roiling and snapping. It was almost stately, spinning slowly backward as it moved through the cold, dusk air. Shadows wound across the lawn, shifting with the fast-moving light source. The heat was intense. Quentin felt it on his face. When it hit a linden, the whole tree went up at once with a single loud, crackling woof. A gout of flame ascended into the sky and vanished.
"Fireball!"
Penny called out unnecessarily. It was an instant bonfire. The tree burned fast and merrily. Sparks flew up impossibly high into the twilight sky. Janet whooped and jumped up and down and clapped her hands like a cheerleader. Penny smiled thinly and took a theatrical bow. They stayed at the house upstate for a few more days, lounging around, grilling on the back patio, drinking up all the good wine, going through the DVD collection, all cramming into the hot tub and then not cleaning it afterward. The fact was, Quentin realized, after all the build-up, all the hasty preparation and rush, 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 they were stalling, vamping, waiting for something to push them into pulling the trigger. They were so excited they didn't see how terrified they were. And when he thought about all the happiness waiting for him in Fillory, Quentin almost felt like he didn't deserve it. He wasn't ready. Ember and Umber would never have summoned someone like him. In the meantime, Alice had somehow figured out a way of never being in the same room as Quentin at the same time. She'd developed a sixth sense about him. He'd catch a glimpse of her out a window, or a flash of her feet as she vanished upstairs, but that was as close as they came. It was almost like a game. The others played it too. When he did spot her in the open, sitting up on the kitchen counter, kicking her legs and chatting with Josh, or hunched over the dining room table with Penny and his books, like everything was fine, he didn't dare intrude. That would be against the rules of the game. Seeing her there, so close and at the same time so infinitely removed, was like looking through a doorway into another universe, a warm, sunny, tropical dimension that he had once inhabited, but from which he was now banished. Every night he left flowers outside her bedroom door. It was a shame. He probably never even had to know what happened. He could easily have missed it. Though maybe they would have stayed there forever if he had. He stayed up late one night, playing cards with Josh and Elliot. Playing cards with magicians always degenerated into a meta contest over who was better at warping the odds, so that practically every hand came up four aces against a couple of straight flushes. Quentin was, tentatively, feeling better. They were drinking grappa. The twisted knot of shame and regret in his chest that had been there since the night with Janet, was gradually coming undone, or at least scarring over. It wasn't nothing, but it wasn't everything either. There was so much right between him and Alice. They could get past this. Maybe it was time he helped her see that. He knew she wanted to. He'd screwed up. He was sorry. They would get past it. QED. They just needed to get it into perspective. She was probably just waiting for him to say it. He excused himself and headed up the stairs to the third floor where the master bedroom was. Josh and Elliot gamely rooted him on his way.
Q, 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 Q.
When he was almost at the top of the stairs, he stopped. Quentin would have known it anywhere, the sound that Alice made when she was having sex. Now here was a conundrum for his drunken mind to reflect on. She was making it now. But it wasn't Quentin who was making her make it. He stared down at the burnt orange natural weave fibers of the runner that ran down the middle of the stairs. He could not be hearing that sound. It came in through his ears and made spots appear in his vision. His blood fizzed like a science experiment and turned to acid. The acid propagated through his body and made his arms and legs and brain burn.